Welcome to It's a Code World, your digital marketing podcast. This podcast will give you practical insights on how to be the Renaissance man or woman in digital marketing and become indispensable for your organization.
Hey there, this is Tim Brown, and this is the third episode of It's a Code World. I'm here with two guests today, which is delightful. First one being Drew Gneiser.
Hey there.
And the other one being my brother, Matt Brown.
Hey.
And today we're going to be talking about social media growth hacking and how to make sincere connections on social. So.
Which I think is a great topic.
Yeah, thanks.
I do. Absolutely, yeah.
Matt's a pretty big social guy. Loves social media.
So is Drew. So is Tim.
We're kind of social media guys.
You could call us nerds, probably.
Probably social media nerds would work.
It took me like past high school and college to become a nerd, pretty much.
I don't know if that's quite how long it took you, Matt. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
But it's a great feeling.
It is a great feeling once you can just fully
embrace the inner nerd.
Yes. Look at Drew. He's not even ready. I thought you were going to say you're not ready for it.
I think Drew just thinks he's a hipster. I think that's
what
he's like nerd. Maybe hipster a little bit.
Very little distinction between those sometimes. Honestly, the best hipsters are nerds, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
I personally feel that way.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just my personal friends that are, I mean, I.
And you would know because you're a very nerdy hipster.
I wince at the term hipster a little bit.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you dress
That's what hipsters do, though. They don't want to be called hipsters. That's part of the deal.
Yeah, that's what makes you one.
That's why I actually wince at it. I pre-planned that answer. No, just kidding. All right, so Drew, you were just filming something a little bit on a new app. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that part of the social media world is trying new apps, trying new sites and playing around with stuff. And so there's this new app that came out called Beme, B-E-M-E.
Yeah.
The idea is simple. Usually when you're posting on social media, you're thinking exactly about what you want to portray. Is it the right lighting? Is it the right angle? Is it, you know, that perfect photo, perfect caption? The idea of Beme is to take all of that away. There's no previewing or reviewing your video, and you cover it up to your chest or your forehead so you can't see the screen, and it posts a 4-second video and it immediately goes on as a Beme.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting pushback against the whole perfectly sculpted, perfectly groomed. Just show a piece of your life as you're seeing.
Yeah.
That's super interesting.
And it goes away once you watch it.
That was made by Casey Neistat and friends, wasn't it?
Yeah, Casey, this videographer from out in New York, has a team, and they put it together, and they really wanted to try something different and new.
Bangers. Some quick tools and resources to whet your appetite.
So, a couple tools to kick off the value train.
What's wrong?
Buffer. This is a huge one for me. I like the rhythm of making sure that I'm posting regularly on social. Sometimes I don't have something right now. I'd rather have my account be pushing out value on a regular basis. So for me, I buffer tweets from there. They actually had this content discovery tool in it for a while, and they took that out because they didn't feel like it was really doing what they wanted it to. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that they're doing that, but there's a couple other tools where you can find good content that your audience will appreciate. There's one called Content Gems. And there's a couple other ones like that where you can just find stuff. And you type in a search term. It gives you most shared stuff that your people in your network are sharing.
Wow, that's super interesting.
Yeah. And then
I didn't even know about that.
One other one is Content Gems. And then there's one called inbound.org, but that's mostly for digital marketing topics. But it's also Q&As with big marketing people and social media people and content marketing.
That's so cool. There's another thing you can do called My Top Tweet, and you can check out other people So if there's accounts that you see are doing pretty well with engagement, mm-hmm. you can check KWorder, you know, 10 of their top tweets. You can see what kind of content's doing well, how people are responding to those. Although, you know, there's so many factors that go into making a tweet get highly engaged with or go viral. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty sweet test along the lines of, you know, Content Gem and other stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Social listening. Kind of talking about that beforehand. So I think some people that do social wrong end up, you know, always talking and not listening. You know what I mean? So if you're kind of like putting your feelers out there and really like figuring out what your audience wants, kind of square.
Yeah, Drew? I really like this tool. If you're looking for a tool to show you analytics and stats and things on Instagram, this is a free tool that has tons of, shows you times of day, which filters are working best for you, which of your tags and
really,
etc. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I've seen that app, I've seen that online, but I did not know that it did all that analytics stuff.
And sure, there's tons and tons of social media paid and non-paid tools for all the different analytics, but this is a cool one for Instagram that I really like.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Is it an app for the phone or computer?
It's a desktop. Yeah. It probably has an app version too.
But I just wanted to add, Facebook native scheduling is what I've started to do in the last few months because the organic reach will go up significantly. I just shared it with a buddy in his page. He started doing organic scheduling, native scheduling on Facebook instead of through Buffer or Hootsuite.
So why do you do that?
And his organic reach went up 3 times.
Why?
So it's a new thing. Facebook's always changing their algorithm.
They're changing it to feature their own scheduler.
Oh, they love doing that.
Facebook is such a...
Facebook wants you to use Facebook. Oh.
But let's just talk real quick about any successes you guys have had recently in social. Talk about things you've been working on.
Yeah, well, one thing is this was really cool to see. There was an event that Drew and I were at together recently in Nashville with about 45 social media professionals, almost all of us exclusively in the nonprofit space, although there was a few friends, one guy who worked with ESPN for many years in their social department, one guy who works with Honest Tea recently. But mostly in the nonprofit space, 45 guys and girls in a room talking social, and the event ended up trending on Twitter.
In Nashville.
Nashville, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's a pretty incredible town. A lot of concerts, all that kind of stuff. There's some big artists in while we were there. But it trended on Twitter for 17 hours straight. 45 nice. People tweeting like mad, right?
Yeah. And but so a lot of them have bigger
followings.
They
do. Yep, they have big following, so that played a role. And then I think we all tweet a lot, and so it helped that we were all talking a lot about. And there's a lot of good content to share from the event. Yeah. And then probably the response of people following us retweeting it because it was like, oh, that's great.
Because all that plays into social too, right?
Yep. And this is only the second. Like, we do a lot of events as an organization, but this is only the second event we've ever seen trend. I've never seen an event trend for 17 hours straight, let alone with a group of only 45 people in a room. It was just astonishing. So that was a good win. It showed the power of social and the power of when you invest in a social, the kind of return you can see from that.
Yeah.
I've just seen a ridiculous amount of real world connections and friendships and opportunities. I mean, just constantly, they just keep coming from social. And so I'm forever grateful to Zuckerberg and, you know, Jack Dorsey and all those guys, man.
Jack Biz Dorsey's Stone Twitter.
And, yeah, Jack Dorsey, Biz Stone. Recently, Dick Costello, but he just finished. But yeah, all the Google Plus guys.
Dick Costello?
I'm messing about that one. No.
Dude, be nice.
Lately, our nonprofit has been doing large meal packing events. So if you're not familiar with Feed My Starving Children, volunteers come in and pack meals as a team. Those meals get sent all over the world for clinics and orphanages. So it's a really hands-on experience to charity, a little bit different than just giving your money. It's you're doing it, you know, you're part of it. So we do meal packing events all over the country. And over the summer, especially, we've had a couple that have packed a million or more meals in a week or a weekend. And I was just down in Phoenix for one of those. We packed over a million meals. But just using the event as a playground for social, right? Tweeting, live streaming, Facebook, Instagram, what's working?
Beaming.
Trying out Beam, yoing, whatever.
Happy birding.
Yeah, you know, like.
Wait, that doesn't count, man.
Taking all those things and seeing, can you capture a story at the event? Can you find that one volunteer or donor who really resonates with people? You know, we had an event this last week in Chicago, in downtown Chicago at Union Station, where they packed 750,000 plus meals. And you know, a story of a homeless guy who was there at the packing event, and they asked him, like, why are you packing? And he gave this beautiful explanation about,
oh, wow,
got to help people because when people come together and, you know, this whole thing. And that's really resonated with people. So
I'm
to be
touched.
At those events.
I am touched, yeah. Severely touched right now.
Yeah, you know, to be that's at the amazing. To be at an event like that and to have your eyes open to what's in front of you to share as part of that story and that experience has been really fun this summer.
That's so
dude,
cool.
I'm just fun. Like, you know, this is a kind of a snaky marketing guy podcast. So yeah. if you could leave your like, good Sappiness. Guy antics at home. Okay,
yeah. We don't want guys crying in their office at work, man, listening to this.
No, that's beautiful. Seriously. So, you know, that really plays into our next question, which is how has social media or how is it changing the world? I know how it's changing my brain because I have an addiction for checking my phone, but how is it changing the world?
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back a few years, thinking even as social was really starting to take off, some of the things that really opened my eyes to it was, you know, some of the revolutions that were caused in the Middle East because I don't know if you guys know in Egypt, I mean, the whole overthrow of their government was because it started with guys, a bunch of people sharing Facebook groups of the atrocities that were happening from the leadership in their government. And then they shut down Facebook over the entire country. And actually, I heard this on a news report. One of the guys who oversees Google for a couple countries in that region was saying that, what I'm telling you now. So they shut down Facebook, and then the people took to the streets. So literally, like, and after the overthrow of the government, like, people were like, graffitiing Facebook on walls. And literally, there's news stories. People were naming their children Facebook, the kids that were being birthed after that revolution. Hmm. Not only in that country, but that was kind of occurring in other countries as well. And it's not that Facebook did a revolution. It's that Facebook and social media gives people a voice for good, for change, and for the positive impact. I mean, that's what it's been used for around the world. The other thing that really surprised me was I went one time to the United Kingdom website, to the British website or whatever, English website, and the front page of their website was like our Facebook page. And that was up for like a long period of time, many, many months.
Yeah.
I was like, the front advertisement of this older style of government, you know, is they realize the value. And and obviously we've seen now, you know, the report just in the first quarter of this year was that over 1 billion people on Earth are active on Facebook.
Wild.
So, I mean, and then there's a lot of other social networks besides Facebook. That's one of the big, you know, the big one. As well as some in Asia that people don't typically know about that are huge. But
and then it's permission marketing, right? So you have a note in there about that, and it's essentially at that point, if somebody likes your Facebook page or follows you on Twitter or follows you on Instagram, they're saying, "I want to hear from you."
Yeah, exactly.
Please
yeah.
share with me more things.
Yeah, Seth Godin, one of the most brilliant marketers out there today, wrote a book years ago, a groundbreaking book called Permission Marketing, where he talks about that's the main thing marketers want is to be permission to stay in touch with people. Facebook and Twitter and these other apps and platforms have made it crazy easy to get permission from people. You know, Seth was talking in the beginning kind of when he wrote that book of email. Email's around and you don't have to even mail people. It's free digitally to email people. Well, now with Facebook and Twitter, you can have those buttons on your website and you don't have to lose the people who are coming to you all the time. So he told the story about how a book marketer will promote their book, this author's book, and it will get huge sales, but they have literally no way to keep back in touch with all those buyers of that book for the next project. Mm-hmm. And so that's why permission marketing is just this vital piece. Facebook and Twitter, you click like, and you're typically logged into those things on your desktop. Yeah. All of a sudden, you have permission to those people for a long period of time, potentially for life, to keep telling them your brand story.
Just real quick to juxtapose that against the alternative, which is interruption marketing, which is, you know, you're watching your favorite show and then a commercial comes on. It's still effective, but the fact that you just interrupted my thing that the thing I want to watch and you're now putting on this other thing that I'm like, okay, you know, like that's what the vibe that you're giving people with your marketing. And essentially this way you're potentially earning an opportunity to continue to share with them. And like, I think that the movement is essentially towards more things where you're actually actively participating in the things that people are wanting to see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the old school version is it is product placement, right? But more and more companies are saying, what kind of value can we provide that's like a positive thing that people will like actually ask for.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just slapping it in the middle of something that they actually want.
Well, and social media has made that easier than ever, even with ads. You can target people so strategically, and the goal with any effective ad, you know, even on TV, but far more so with social media, is that they're excited they saw your ad. That's how you know you're doing it right. That's what I like to think of as strategic growth on social media. And so that's a powerful thing to get to the permission marketing level. I mean, you can just, it's really important to narrow down and not just do general targeting when you do social ads.
You know, when I think about how social's changed the world, I know it's probably been talked to death before, but you know, the thing for me that has changed the most that I see is, you know, if you had a story to tell, if you had something burning in your heart, if you had a passion to talk about a specific topic or bring a message to the world, you know, 20 years ago, that was a lot harder. Hmm. You had to kind of ask for permission. There's another way that we talk about permission, but yeah. You know, you had to hope that NBC would pick you or hope that you could get signed. And now it's easier than ever. You can tonight, if you want to, go onto YouTube and start a YouTube channel and sit in front of your camera and talk about that story. And you can go out and write and self-publish an ebook. And you can start a Twitter account and connect with people that care about that same thing as you. And think, you know, the access to people like you has never been more easy to come by. And so all of that kind of stuff has really opened up so many opportunities for you to be heard, for you to say something you think is important for the world to hear. And maybe not something for every single person, but that's part of it too, right? Because it's so open, you can now find people that are very, very specifically about hunger in Nicaragua only, if that's what you want to talk about. You know, that's the one that comes in my head right away too. But I think that's super, super interesting.
Yeah, communities, amazing. Like micro communities of people that are interested in the same thing can finally get together. That's why we have bronies.
Bronies. Yeah, we're finally getting to the bronies.
Unfortunately.
What is that?
Brony, it's dudes that are into My Little Pony.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. It's a disturbing thing that exists.
Documentary.
But they literally have conventions.
Oh, wow.
Of bronies that are dudes that are into My Little Pony.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
So hopefully.
I mean, but seriously, if you're a brony listening to this podcast, still like you, I'm just a little bit confused.
Yeah.
But I tried to watch a couple episodes of the show because like, they're like literally really into it. Like they're really, really into it. Like, and they loved like the storyline and like the moral, like, because like the thing is like something about we're all friends or something. And like, they're really into like the actual, like the ideas in the show. And I'm like, what?
I wanted to know. Tim is actually a brony.
I'm severe brony. Yes. No.
It's a silly way to illustrate the point, but that is the point. Is you can find people like you.
Yeah.
And that's never been like that.
Yeah. So Matt, just real quick, you have got a couple crazy experiments going on right now. Can you talk to us about your two completely different efforts to grow ridiculous email lists?
Yeah, and you know, I'm usually not a big proponent of taking social or other platforms to grow email, but email's still probably one of the most powerful ways, I mean, more than social.
Super effective.
To see conversion, to see a response to what you're offering, to see sales and all that kind of stuff, donations for nonprofits. And so just super interesting. One of them was a friend who's a health and fitness author. We just offered a free ebook on his page, and I've never seen anything like this. I want to actually test it in other platforms and see what takes place with it. But he had spent years writing incredible articles to build an email list to over 10,000 people. And we did a single Facebook boost, spent a decent amount of money offering just this free ebook. Hey, sign up.
Wait,
for the
can
email
you say
list.
Real numbers?
Yeah. So we how much we spent on the boost?
Yeah.
Thousands of dollars. I'll just say it like that. And we doubled the size of his email list that he had spent his life building. Mm-hmm. We got over 12,000 emails on that list, and it's still growing.
Any other?
From a free ebook offering. So it was beautifully designed.
Yeah.
And we boosted it to people who probably already loved his stuff. And I think he's just an incredible writer. People love his stuff. So.
Any other keys to that it was that effective? Because obviously you can't just throw money at stuff.
Well, and that's the amazing thing. We boosted it to fans and friends of fans, not just to the people who like the page, okay. but their friends as well.
Okay.
And I think it was the fact that it was a nice looking ebook. I think it was the fact that the image we put with it was really beautiful. And I think it's a niche market where people are really interested in what is being offered.
The headline and stuff was well-crafted. What was like the emotional appeal, essentially?
It wasn't even necessarily emotional appeal. I think it's that people wanted stuff from this guy. That's why I want to test it in more places and see what happens with it. But
so it's personality driven.
Yeah, but I think it's the, hey, if people want something that you're sharing, like a written thing, and you spend a decent amount of money boosting it, potentially you can bring those people over to email. So that's what it was, is enter your email to get this download. And then they continued to utilize that network of new people to point them to a subscription option that they were trying to do. So it was not just for the purpose of giving out the content, but that as well.
And so the other story?
Yeah, the other site that we've been working on is a site that is for basically nonprofit and church communications. And so it's for the social media creative directors in a lot of different places. And what we've done with it, we have a bunch of incredible writers. We've got about 35 writers on there sharing short articles. And what we've been doing with it is the article is up for 24 hours and then it disappears.
Mm-hmm. And so like an article Snapchat.
Yeah, basically. Kind of following Snapchat, Periscope, you know, I think does that a lot. And we weren't thinking of those things. What we were trying to think of is how do we get people to subscribe? And so we don't even have social options on that site. All we have is you can enter your email so that you don't miss the article. And I'll tell you, like...
So you guys don't tweet about these things at all or anything?
Yeah, we tweet about them on the writers' accounts rather than our own accounts.
Yeah.
And most of these writers have a lot of followers. We don't need to build a platform for it because they all have it. And then the people who subscribe via email will be sharing it as well.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, even as a founder of that site, when I see that email that a new article's up, like, I get scared. And I've gone there sometimes when the article's already disappeared, and I'm angry. I'm like, I missed it. I missed the article. So we tried to do short synopsis and keep those coming out. And so what we were seeing, though, was that 20 to 30% of the people visiting the site were subscribing via email. And typically, it's about 2% for a site, 2 to 3%. Yeah. So it significantly increased. Typically, it's about 2 to 3% subscribe when they visit a site. Yeah. And we were seeing 20 to 30%. So
that's crazy.
It was huge. We'll see if that trend continues.
It's but like
that
the was only going call on to action weeks. On the page, though.
It's the only call to action.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that. We want to just provide value for that community. And we wanted to do something different. Like, because everything's always the same.
You said you were kind of like, in a way, it leverages that, you call it FOMO? Fear of missing out.
Fear of missing out, yep. And Drew writes for that site and some friends of ours. And, you know, we hope to get guest writers and other people and keep that content close.
Drew, you had me and Matt out to your nonprofit as part of an effort to get influencers, quote unquote, tweeting. So what did you learn from that effort? And, you know, what are you up to these days?
Yeah, you know, again, our nonprofit has volunteers come in and pack meals. And I thought, you know, it'd be really fun to get some people who like using Twitter and Instagram to come out. It was for World Hunger Day. And we thought, you know, let's just come out and pack some meals together. I always love it when people can meet in real life, right? You guys are obviously brothers, so you know each other. But there's some people that came. It was the first time they had met each other. So if you can do that, that's always a positive thing. And then we, you know, encouraged all the people there to be posting on their pages. That was kind of why they were there, right? It's people who use these platforms a lot. Yeah, so I don't know, to sum that up, you know, working with influencers, whatever that means for you, whether that's a celebrity, whether that's a musician, whether that's just someone who uses social media really well, it's good to build relationships with them. It's good to learn from them. It's good to have them talk about your nonprofit or your cause or your company. If they believe in it, especially, it's going to resonate more with their audience. But don't expect it to like make your year forever.
Yeah, it's all about discipline, right?
It is what it is.
Yeah,
it is. You're always going to have to hustle, work hard.
It's a steady thing. You get those main things that you do regularly, and if you're doing them regularly, then it tends to make an impact.
I think the things that are way underrated because they're not that exciting to talk about with social are consistency and like the discipline and the regularity of doing stuff and the, you know, all that stuff that sounds kind of boring and obvious is a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't do still.
You kind of just got to be there too. Like if you're like, it's hard as a brand because if you're not actually just chilling, like if you're not actually just like excited to go on Twitter and look at some random stuff or like whatever the social thing is, like you're probably not really getting used to the conventions of that particular social media thing to be able to interact in a natural feeling way with the people there. So
that's a great point.
If you're just trying to get on there real quick and get out, you know what I mean? It doesn't really work as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You need to engage in the platforms. You need to be listening. You know, Drew talked about this earlier in the podcast, more than listening, more than you're, you know, just pumping out content, connecting with people, keeping the social and social, you know, I mean, Drew, you talked about favoriting stuff all the time and yeah, just caring about what other people are saying too. So you can imagine a conversation among friends and one person does all the talking, where that's going to go, you know?
Yep.
So that's why I've tried not to talk too much in this podcast. No,
so, just real quick, I'll share a little bit of a story because I had my first experience where somebody paid me to tweet about their stuff the other day.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Which was really interesting. And I mean, this is an example of somebody trying to use my stuff, like my account as an influencer account. I got a firsthand view of what that looks like. And I'll say this, like not, you know, not going to say any specifics or anything like that, but essentially the fact that these efforts are best when the idea of the account coincides with the idea of what's being promoted.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. That's where it's going to be best.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not going to talk about exactly what it was, but essentially like the best thing that I could promote would be like a web design or like web marketing a type account. Yeah. To me, that's the most effective that my account could be. Cause that's the natural,
that's the audience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, to me, you can have peripheral things that I obviously have earned an audience over time of a lot of hard work with, you know, reaching out, following people, retweeting, all that stuff. Like, but it's always been in the vein of one particular subject, web design and web marketing. So best teaming up with those type of accounts.
Oh, totally.
You know what I mean?
It's and not just about having influencers.
Yeah.
And I talked about this with a group of friends recently, but it's the right influencers.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just spreading the word out to 100,000 or a million people. It's trying to get the right people.
It's better to get smaller
accounts if they're the right accounts.
Let's say this. If there's a guy that has 30K followers and a guy that has 10K followers, but the guy that has 30K followers or, you know, 10K followers is closer to your niche.
Yeah.
Like definitely team with that person. And then you see these people with like, they have, to me, it's all about favorites and retweets. You know, it's not about followers at all. So like I see somebody who has like 2,000-3,000 followers and then like they have like 15 people are favoriting or like retweeting their stuff. That's huge.
Yeah.
How are you doing that? First of all, that person is a real influencer. The fact that they have that big of a percentage of their audience interacting with their stuff.
Yeah, it's not just followers, it's engagements for sure.
Percentages.
Yeah. And I'll see this actually, Tim, as well with, like I have a specific niche of, I share devotional content on my stuff. And if I share, I love reading. So if I start sharing like some business content, it doesn't do as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's an incredible quote, but my audience knows me more for other things.
Yeah.
And so my engagement level is significantly changed if I share something outside of my niche versus my niche, you know?
Exactly.
And you're really known for, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 things. And so it's how you build, and it's the audiences you connect with to build that depends on your content.
A guy that I love and probably reference in like, you know, a third of any kind of content that I do, his name is Sean McCabe, and his podcast is the Sean West podcast, but he talks a lot about curating what you share and being very particular. I can never get on board with it so hardcore like he is, because he's essentially like, if it's not about, you know, either
XYZ
business or hand lettering, he will not tweet, you know, or will not share. And I can't fully get on board with that. Every once in a while, I have to tweet about pizza.
And you want to do selfies too.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, but usually my selfies have something to do with my, you know, the web marketing stuff. But essentially, you're right. I do tweet sometimes, so it's in selfie and not.
That's wonderful. Not
that. No, but anyways, the point being is that his idea of curating what you share challenges me. It definitely challenges me because I know like if something is really outside of the realm of that thing that people have followed me for in the first place, I'm kind of like challenging them and maybe even like giving them a little bit of a, like a, an insult. I mean, it's not really an insult, but you know what I mean? I'm essentially sharing something that they did not follow me for. Mm, yeah. They didn't follow me for, you know, my tweets on
Pizza. And it depends on the count too. Cause you know, when it's a person, there is some room for sharing your life with people a little bit too. And sometimes people like that, but
I think but
as a celebrity account is different. Their content, people follow them to see their life, you know? Yeah. So you got to be careful. You can't share too much of random stuff. You want to be focused.
Exactly. You know, because you share things outside of the realm of that stuff that people follow you for, and you see the engagement go down.
Yeah. I still share it anyways because it's my account and I can do what I want.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that's still got to enjoy it. Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel too.
But I do try to be, you know, to be focused. And I mean, it's typically, I don't think through it too hard on my personal stuff versus organizational, but it's good to think about. It's a good challenge.
Is there any other hardcore social media tactics that you guys have been part of that have produced real results that you want to chat about?
Well, I found one of the most effective things on Facebook. Facebook being a unique platform, a lot of people have challenges with it, don't fully understand it to the same degree as they might Twitter. Each platform is different. But with Facebook, one of the biggest things is ads. You really got to have an ongoing budget for Facebook ads, for Facebook boosts. And you don't have to have a ton. Just a little bit can go semi-far. But Facebook ads is really how you go somewhere on Facebook. That's the way they built it. They did a $100 billion IPO, and you know they realized that
they have to pay.
It has to go this way. So
we have to make the money.
You know, and people complain. We got a buddy, Justin Wise, who's, you know, he's a great example of just, he's just like, hey, we can reach more people more strategically than we've ever been able to. We should not be complaining about anything. We should be thanking them. But
just because you know, can target those ads down to the weirdest little niche.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. So that's the biggest thing on Facebook. You know, each platform is different. But I'll tell you, if you're not doing Facebook ads for your product, your brand, your organization, I mean, you gotta spend some money there.
And we don't, actually.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't either.
I would challenge you too. I agree that most people now especially do have to do that. Mm-hmm. I can't 100% explain why we still have a really healthy Facebook community.
Yeah, and you do?
Our posts still have enormous reach. We have huge engagement. When I ask for a click into a page that I want some action, I get lots of clicks.
Really?
And I think some of that is just people really, really love our organization. Some of that is I focus a lot on having new content all the time, new stories, new photos. I try to not post the same thing.
You do some creative stuff, man. I've been really impressed.
You know, and some of it's just knowing again what really resonates with the people that like our page. And so we've been lucky and we've been smart about it. But
how many on-site volunteers did you have like last year?
Yeah, last year we had about 900,000 volunteers.
So that could play a role.
Across, you know, the U.S.
Yeah, it's like a little bit of a following.
You got almost a million people on site. You know, there's some brand resonance that is so much larger than any social network.
Yeah, for us, one of our biggest challenges is connecting that volunteer experience, which is offline, obviously, to the online experience, right? You can come and volunteer once a year, once every couple months, and leave and kind of forget about it. So what we try to do with our social platforms is remind people of that really good feeling they had. Remind them of the impact they had. Remind them that their donation made a huge difference.
Yeah, I've seen that a little bit in your guys' posts, I think, talking about you guys helped do this. And
yeah, and
that,
so
that very positive message, people love that inspirational
There's enough negative stuff, right, on Facebook to scroll through between politics and racism and all that stuff. So we try to really have that hopeful tone to remind them of how awesome it was. And it's worked pretty well for us.
Yeah. So some articles, I'm going to share any of these articles that we talk about in the show notes at timbdesign.com/podcast-3. And, you know, let's talk about this one you got here, Matt. No, Drew.
Yeah, I kind of brought up a few. You know, the types of articles I read, there's a lot of articles that will change after 6 months or a year, depending on tactics and things like that. So I think that's always important to watch for. I try to read things that are a little more evergreen. Yeah. But one of the ones recently, I think that's pretty pertinent to read. One of the guys on Medium put out a post about Facebook video views, like this whole debate about YouTube versus Facebook native videos. And Facebook is saying, oh, we're getting like way more views. We're getting you know, I put up sometimes put a video on our page and it'll get 7,000 views in a night on one post, you know, on our page.
Yeah.
And the guy in this article was suggesting maybe that wasn't entirely accurate, that someone can watch a Facebook video for 3 seconds and it gets counted as a view as they're scrolling through. Kind of, I think it's really interesting. Whatever is going on there, really interesting. There's a couple articles out there right now to understand how video is working on all these platforms. Understand the difference between Snapchat video and Facebook video and Periscope video and how your strategy is fitting in with that. I think that's really important. Another resource that I really like is just having a place where you can find all the social media image sizes that's consistent. I found a pretty good article through Sprout that they always update so that I don't have to ever Google it again. Nice. It's been a nice thing to keep bookmarked.
Sproutsocial.com, and that link will be up in the show notes as well. It's always up-to-date guide to social media image sizes. Also, Google is a good way to find that one probably.
Exactly.
Well, I'm saying they can Google Sprout and then always up-to-date guide to social media images. Perfect. And refresh on social media 2015 article from Hootsuite. This is me, I think. It's the article I'm sharing. I'm going to put it up on there. I love the take a hard look at your social accounts, ditch the dead weight. Because guess what? We have a lot of social things that kind of hang around and you kind of post to them obligatorily. Like Google Plus. I always post to Google Plus. Nobody sees that. Not in my network. There's not a lot of people on Google Plus.
Plus, it's going to shut it down. Too, it goes into oblivion.
Yeah.
You know, or hangs on the internet somewhere forever.
I just always kind of was like, you know, bowing down a little bit to the Google monster because I thought that sharing on there was like helping my SEO.
I had high hopes for it too. Yeah. I was pretty bullish at first and thought, this is going to connect in a way that's never.
It was a beautiful platform. That's the crazy thing. I really encourage, you know, investing time in where people not only have signed up or are active, there's an active community there, and focus the most of your effort there. But yeah, that's the challenge with Google Plus is it was such a ghost town most of the time.
Mm-hmm. So another thing is set better social media goals. So create a branded hashtag and attract at least 10 user generated photos per week. Instead of like, we're going to get 100 enterprise leads this year or something kind of a grandstanding, you know, social media thing that's not going to work. Essentially trying to get really reasonable goals. Like what has been a success? Let's increase that by 3. You know what I mean? Like let's increase our existing success by a significant but reasonable number. Depending on whatever that means for you, maybe you want an average of maybe you currently, your company has, you know, an average of 3 favorites or retweets per tweet. You could say, I want to double that in a year. That's a pretty reasonable goal. However, whatever size you guys are, I know that for the digital agency that I run social for, it's a little harder than running it for a personal account. You know, people tend to want to interact with other individuals, and there's so many spammy accounts out there that essentially it's, you know, you kind of blend in a little bit. Oh, it's just, you know, another one of those kind of spammy accounts. I don't want to be another spammy account. So we actually added me and the girl that run it added our handles to the bio of that social account so that they can see it is real people. It's not, you know, of course it's real people. There's real people
but
behind
it's
every
just
social.
Not a machine.
Yeah, we're not.
Very interesting.
Yeah, we're not just, you know, it's not just a corporation. It's a couple people running this, and we're kind of calling that out a little bit more, making it a little bit more clear. Let's see. Build a Twitter list and actually follow it. Use Twitter in a listening way, not just to spread your own agenda. We talked about that a little bit. I really do think that, you know, you can make lists in Twitter. So I follow a lot of people, but I really check my lists. I make lists of different categories of people. The one I check the most is called Truth. It's not important. It's basically hilarious people in digital marketing. Oh. I really like following them and like retweeting them. And it's like kind of like, Yeah, a little the onions like sprinkled in there a little bit.
The
like,
juror
just funny
I
stuff.
Like happened to pass.
Neither of you guys are in truth.
Oh
no.
My goodness.
You guys are in the realness though, which is my second go-to list, which is it's all about.
You wouldn't lie in this podcast.
It's all about tons of value people that I follow, and essentially, and then other people in my area. Essentially, those are my main two go-to lists.
Was that list like basically like Drew, Seth Godin, Gary Vaynerchuk?
Basically.
The other guys
and you,
no,
yeah, those are all the people.
Yeah, lists are really.
I wasn't
really
gonna
huge.
Add myself in there.
I'm surprised at the number of people who still haven't figured out. They still think everybody that I follow, I have to see every tweet.
Yeah,
right. And after you follow 90 people, it's too much, and then they get frustrated and stop following people. Yeah. The opportunity is there to make these lists. I have lists of Minneapolis and people that work at nonprofits and people that are funny and people that.
Did
I want to get in with.
Did Tim make the funny list? Or no?
Tim's not on that one.
He's probably on his own funny list.
He's on his own list. Yeah.
Funny guys.
The brilliant thing is you can add yourself to your own list.
Yes. Can you?
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone would ever do that.
Well, you want to see yourself in the stream with others.
Probably.
I may or may not have added myself to my list.
So. I did actually make one list that was called Can I Speak There? And I added Creative Mornings to that one list.
Oh, that's perfect.
So essentially, they instead of like I couldn't direct message them because they hadn't followed me yet. So it was my way of saying, by the way, and I asked them the question through adding them to that list.
Oh, interesting.
They haven't answered me yet, but Drew Gneiser is going
to
let me speak.
I didn't
there
see
next
you
year.
Add us to that list. Yeah, but, yeah, we can.
Do you run their Twitter account?
I do.
Oh my goodness. Hey, Drew, can I speak there?
That's brilliant.
All right. So one last little thing on this refresh on social media 2015 article was get all your contact info right and get your little bio popping. I think that just taking a hard refresh on any of those social profiles, making sure they're up to date, really using that space. It's always the bio, really, that people are going to see right when they hit the page, hit your account. Is, you know, it's a big deal. It's the main thing that you're saying. So maybe one social media thing that you could do after this podcast, it's a real solid thing, is just go to each of those main social accounts that you have, Facebook's, Twitter, Instagram, maybe those are the main ones. Just updating your bio, making sure you're really using that space. Maybe even, you know, having a call to action of, you know, we're happy you found us, follow, you know, or what have you.
Yeah, definitely.
And what does the future of social media look like, guys? Excuse me, I said one more time. Matt and Drew, what does the future of social media look like? Is social media going to reach a kind of apex and fall off? Is it going to turn into something else? Any idea? I'm thinking grand scheme here.
Well, I think social media has changed everything. I think it's going to be around for good. Is it going to be Facebook or Twitter? You know, those ones are the really big ones as far as active users. There's a lot of cool new ones like Instagram and YouTube's been around for a long time, obviously, as well. We haven't talked a lot about that. Back since 2011, more than 50% of Americans were on Facebook, and 97% of millennials, which is kind of the next generation, probably anyone 35 or younger, basically, and it breaks at some point and goes into another generation.
Matt,
too.
Are you a millennial?
Yeah, I'm in the millennial generation on the front end. You would be
no,
as well. We all would be.
Okay.
What are you putting yourself in, Generation YZ or something like that?
No, I'm in millennial.
So, are you thinking that you're older than me or something? I don't know. Anyway, so
no. I was
so
saying you're old.
Yeah, no, I am. It's true. So, yeah. So basically, I mean, essentially, in the U.S., it's saturated. On Facebook level and some of the other platforms, I think it's going to go more global. So I think if brands want to engage, they have to start thinking also globally and worldwide, not just in the U.S. Now, you know, it might look different for someone like Drew's organization, but a lot of brands and organizations need to start thinking, you know, how do we go to India? How do we go to China? How do we go to Africa on these platforms? Or on the platforms that are big.
I believe Drew's organization is already going there.
Huge levels of people. Well, they're sending stuff around the world, obviously. But maybe some of those countries can even help pack. I don't know. So basically, that's one shift that, you know, the U.S. might be saturated and everybody's on. So we'll just have to keep engaging better and better and more reaching the right audience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other thing that's really interesting that I'm seeing these days is there's a couple platforms that people are kind of trying to launch where it's this idea that if you only could post one thing a day, what would you post? Mm-hmm. It limits the amount that you can put out there. And that kind of makes you do a couple things. One, it limits the enormous amount of content that's being like fire hosed like Twitter is now. But it also goes, what is that one most important thing I want to say? If I only had kind of that last thing before you die feel to it.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of interesting. And there may be a movement of younger people that are kind of sick of how much is out there, mm-hmm. that are kind of sick of the fire hose, that are kind of thinking that it's too much. Mm-hmm. And they would want to just say, I'm actually only going to be on Snapchat and that's it.
Yeah,
I'm going to ignore everything else. I'm going to only do that. Or I'm only going to do this one one platform and limit the number of people I follow and stuff like that. So
it's something to be said about what you're saying, that it's you're studying the way the human mind works. You're studying sociology and psychology and general, you know, interaction with humans, because that stuff will inform your social strategy, because that stuff will help you interact more smartly
for the long term.
And a couple of the ones that everybody knows is the Seth Godins, the Malcolm Gladwells. They're writing about interesting stuff about people.
I love
those. And like even Chip and Dan Heath, where we're talking about, you know, where they have lessons about how people act, and you can learn those things and then apply it to things like Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, not platform based, you know,
I even love
how people work.
I even love like Dave Trott is this like old school advertising guy and he writes blogs that are all stories.
Yeah.
He'll tell a story about the making of the movie Blade Runner and go through this really interesting narrative about it. And at the very end, there's some kind of like little gem,
little limerick
about how people think or how creativity works. And that stuff is pretty timeless.
Man, I want to read that guy. That sounds incredible. Yeah,
we'll link it up. His name's Dave Trott.
Dave Trott.
He writes in a few different places, but you know, he's been just kind of a fascinating dude. Yeah. Those kind of people, I think, interest me a lot more than reading, you know.
Well, and amazingly, an older guy that I love reading is Al Rice. He was like just a father of marketing back in the day.
What did he write? Like a big book that he
wrote the end of marketing or the
I feel like I've heard of
the rise of PR, the end of marketing, the rise of PR.
Okay.
And in a bunch of other books, including some recently with his daughter. And man, his stuff it's evergreen. I mean, it's stuff that you're like, this still applies, and it was written in the 80s, and it applies very powerfully. You almost feel like you're missing out if you don't read them. I think once you do read them, so he'd be a great guy to check out as well. You can throw him in the links.
I will do that. I wanted to talk about one other one that I recently read, which was amazing. It's called Scientific Advertising. It's by Claude C. Hopkins. And it's short. It's really short. I actually bought an audiobook form, and I have a blog post where I give the PDF to download because it's in the public domain because it's that old. But I just love it. It's really challenging that he essentially says, when you're starting a project, and I build websites in Minneapolis on WordPress, but I was reading it, and he was saying every single one of your marketing campaigns should have a very specific intended outcome, so a number and a date by it. And I really found that very challenging. He says essentially that there's two veins of thought in marketing, and this was true back in the 1920s, is, you know, some people will tell you it's, you know, you just got to get the word out there. It's about saturation. And then there's other people that actually have, you know, tested things and are coming up with these numbers and finding what works and what doesn't work. And essentially over time, you start to figure that out and you start to synthesize a general method for doing it more effectively. And essentially over time, you can get it down to kind of a scientific method. And I think that I found that challenging because I don't always do that, but I'm looking to further that direction, and starting with projects now, I'm coming up with a very intended outcome. Like I said, very reasonable, kind of a step up, but not 10 steps up from where they currently are, and then a date attached to it. And I think that book just really kind of opened my eyes to a little bit of...
I'd love to read that too.
Yeah,
that
sounds it's short too. So I really like the fact that he boils it down.
Articles?
It's a book, and he gives such down to earth little tidbits in there. It's really good, and he'll throw bits and pieces out there, because back in the day they had they had coupons that you'd use out of these like articles, right? They'd throw a coupon in there. That wasn't just to get people in because now I get a deal. It was to track the ad. So like as many coupons as they get back, that's how many people that they counted as really converted, you know, as a conversion essentially. And so the more coupons they get back, the more successful the campaign. And we have the, you know, a lot of that feedback now in social and in websites that we can say, this is a conversion. You know what I mean? We know when somebody submits a contact form, signs up to volunteer, signs up for an email list. And so, you know, utilizing all that info that's coming back at us and really like setting solid goals. But I just love his little tidbits about like, we did this on an ad. Like we gave them more info and gave them very specific info and made particular claims. And then the conversion rate went up and he talks about those things. I love how he says like, you give a very specific claim versus a generalized one, you get much better results because people assume you have the hard numbers to like verify that. Because people, when you give a very specific number, like, you know, makes your teeth 32% whiter, they assume that there's really been a test and, mm-hmm. and essentially, I don't know, I guess it encourages, you know, specificity.
And that's super like interesting. Yeah. I'm really enjoying these recommendations you guys have given.
Anyways, any other questions you guys would like to talk about or ask or anything? Any last thoughts, parting ways?
Well, I'm wondering, like, Drew, how did you get your teeth 32%? What was going on there?
No. I drink lots of coffee. Doesn't happen.
How did you get your teeth 32% browner?
Coffee. The answer is coffee.
Yes. I like it. So just real quick, where can they find us on Twitter? Matt?
Yeah, so my full name is Matt Brown, and that's been taken on every platform. It's like one of the most common names ever.
Yeah,
Brown, I think, is like the most common last name in America. Yeah, really? So that's been taken. I mean, I would have to get Matt Brown 4896237.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So mine's all at Evangelist Matt.
And Facebook, website?
Twitter. Website is thinke.org.
And Drew, where can they find you on
It's my full name everywhere too, and luckily I have a unique last name, so that works out for me.
Do you want to spell it out?
Drew Geniser, GNEISER. DrewGeniser.com, Drew Geniser on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat.
Lucky dude.
Periscope, Beam.
Yeah. Yo.
Let's do it.
Flappy Bird.
Yes. So last thing in parting, I just want to invite you to rate the podcast on iTunes. And once again, the show notes are at timbydesign.com/podcast-3.
And if you do rate the podcast, your teeth will get 32% whiter.
Yes, specific numbers.
Try it and see what you think.
I'm looking forward to doing the next podcast and you listening. Please tweet us and have a... Oh, did I share my Twitter account?
No, you need to share
at timbydesign MPLS. And thanks for listening. Have a good one.
Join us next time for It's a Code World, bringing you radical guests speaking to relevant topics in digital marketing. From visual design to front-end development, from growth hacking social media and SEO to work process tips and working with clients. Stay tuned, and we'll keep talking about topics you care about. Thank you for listening. Until next time.